I don't know if this is working. I don't think so. I just want to acknowledge my colleague, Dr. Anastasia Fisher, who's in the office, in the audience. She and I have conducted several studies together on women prisoners. She presented a paper this morning about those findings. And our other colleague, Dr. Michael Gates, who isn't here today. He's our workforce expert. We have no relationships to disclose. In 2008, the Pew Center on the States reported that 1 in 100 adults in the United States was incarcerated. That's in both jail and prison. And in our country, there are over 2 million people who are in jails and prisons. And I say this because I have this slide because when we present our work, oftentimes people look at our clients or our participants as other, and they say, oh, it's a different population if you're talking about the homeless. Oh, it's a different population if you're talking about a public health nurse's caseload. Oh, it's a different population if you're talking about women who are in alcohol and drug and recovery. Well, I'm here to tell you it's not always a different population. These individuals most often return to their communities, and they return with lots and lots of health problems to our already stressed healthcare system. So if we think they're not, that they're somewhere, that they're locked up and they're not coming into our caseloads, et cetera, that's really not accurate. More than 4 in 10 offenders, and I shouldn't use that word, really. I should say prisoners return to state prison within 3 years of their release. So you can see there's a revolving door. There's an institutional circuit that prisoners travel through. And as I mentioned, prisoners have numerous health risks and health disparities. Typically, there are well-documented accounts of their substance abuse disorders, severe and persistent mental illness, communicable disease that should be a concern for all of us, TB and MRSA, just to mention a couple, HIV, chronic physical health problems. They often come from impoverished communities, and persons of color are overrepresented in this population. Healthcare delivery in jails and prisons has kind of an interesting history. And there's a book of standards for nurses in correctional facilities that was published in 2007. Actually, the first edition came out in 1995. And they say that throughout most of history, prisoners in the United States had little access, had access to little or no health care. Much of inmate health care was provided by other inmates, correctional officers, and an occasional physician. And this was this is taken from an account by Mary Muse in 2009. And I'm here to tell you that in our research with women prisoners, clearly that still goes on, especially that inmates often care for other inmates in jails and prisons. But in the 1960s, there was a civil rights movement. And there was an important Supreme Court decision, Estelle v. Gamble, in which it was decided that to deny a prisoner medical care, that it would be a violation of the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution. And since then, it generated an increased emphasis on delivering care in jails and prisons, probably not always for altruistic reasons, but to meet litigious needs, etc. The other thing I think is important to remember is the International Council of Nursing has a position statement on the nurses' role in the care of detainees and prisoners, and they say emphatically that prisoners and detainees have the right to health care and humane treatment. And they adopt that statement from the Universal Declaration of Human Rights from the United Nations. This is a picture of the scope and standards of practice from the American Nurses Association that I mentioned came out in 2007. And also APHA has a standard for health services and correctional institutions that came out in 2003. And if you haven't taken a look at this document, I suggest you do because we started looking through it to see what exactly it did say about nursing. And the word nurse is not in the index of this document. If you go through, you can find discussion of nurses, but they're lumped into discussions of other health professionals and services that need to be provided. And this document, there's discussion about revising this document, and I think nursing really needs to be at the table. Nurses are the largest care providers, the biggest number of care providers in these institutions. They're the largest segment of the jail and prison healthcare workforce. So we know from the literature that prisons and jails are notoriously difficult to staff. Certainly there are greater opportunities in the free world with better salaries and resources for nurses, and there's considerable stigma associated with working in correctional healthcare. But Mary Muse has said in an interesting article that it is the nurse with whom the inmate interacts most frequently and whom the officer consults when an inmate has a health problem, and that nurses must be clinically competent and well-grounded in nursing practice. Their judgment is critical to the inmate's access to care. And I will share with you that in our own research with women prisoners, clearly it was nurses that made the difference in whether or not a prisoner received health care. So our intent in this particular paper was to start looking at the research-based literature related to nursing practice in jails and prisons, and to identify the most salient research findings and issues that confront this segment of the public health nursing workforce. We did a computer-based literature search using CINAHL and Medline, and we searched also through the references in some of the more salient articles that we found. We searched using the terms nursing and prison, nursing and jail, forensic and nursing and prison, forensic and nursing and jail, and correctional nursing and research. So you can see there's are some different terms that are used to refer to the nurses who work in jails and prisons. We focused on data-based research studies. There are a lot of anecdotal accounts, but we really wanted to find those papers that were based on research, and we focused on those that are published in English. And we stopped at 1994 because that's when one of the more salient research-based articles was published. I'll tell you a little bit about that, and it's 15 years ago. As I mentioned, there are many anecdotal and descriptive accounts, and there are just a few limited studies of nursing practice and the delivery of healthcare by nurses in jails and prisons. These are really the major research-based articles of nursing practice in jails and prisons that we found. Dr. Nellie Droz in 1994 wrote a paper based on her dissertation that had to do with nurses working in correctional facilities. And it was a qualitative study. And in that study, she found that the delivery of healthcare depended upon what the nurse's perspective of healthcare, and especially on the perspective of custody, and that it was really determined by this interaction, and especially with the perspective of custody, as to whether or not the nurse was able to give care to the patient who was the prisoner. You know, and I have to say, since that study, that theme really runs through much of the subsequent research. These are some of the others, and I'll give you kind of a summary of what the major findings were of those studies. That, first of all, there's a well-documented tension between caring for prisoners and the priorities of custody. And this is discussed over and over. And particularly in the articles and other publications by Catherine Mauve, you can find a really good discussion of this tension between the two and how important it is for the nurse to remain aligned and an advocate for the patient rather than aligning him or herself with custody in order to deliver effective care. Second, there's variable contexts that form the background for nurse, custody, and prisoner interactions. Again, those are similar to the early study by Dr. Nellie Droz that I mentioned. Managing health problems in these settings is exceedingly complex. I mean, this goes as sort of an understatement. There's some research that looks at stress among nurses who work in jails and prisons, of the complexities of dealing in a delivering care in these environments where custody has so much power, and the emphasis is on safety and not much looking at caring. Certainly there are studies that show that nurses have varying conceptions of nursing practice in jails and prisons, that nurses place varying importance on clinical activities, and there's some interesting work that has come out by one of the last people I noted on that list, a woman named Shelton in Connecticut, who's talked about how nurses rate their needs and their roles, and how they had so many they had so much emphasis on the organizational support that they put little emphasis on their own personal development, and how difficult it was for them to grow as a practitioner. So they also rate workload and organizational support as the highest sources of their stress. So what is needed in this area? Certainly we need studies that describe the nursing workforce in jails and prisons. We need studies related to the conditions in which these nurses practice. We need studies that link nursing practice to prisoner health outcomes, similar to the work that Linda Aiken has done in hospitals. We need to start looking at what kinds of staffing issues there are that will increase or decrease patient morbidity and mortality. You know, and we come from California, which is a state in which the Department of Corrections is in an abysmal state of affairs. I can't even begin to tell you. The health conditions are so bad. There was a prisoner dying once a week. There was a federal judge who ruled that the medical system within the Department of Corrections had to be placed under a receiver who took over the medical care. Now, because the prisons are still so crowded, people still aren't accessing care. They have a new solution where they're going to move prisoners into jails, which are even worse staffed and have fewer resources, you know, with local counties being strapped and schools closing. I mean, we're fighting for resources between prisons and schools. In our state, for the first time, we've spent more money on prisons than we have on higher education. So this is a huge dilemma for all of us as citizens and as nurses. And certainly we need to start looking at what some of these staffing issues are. You know, what is making these people healthier? What is making them sicker? Much of the research shows that individuals who go into prison come out sicker than when they went in. Okay, we also need studies that examine the effectiveness of nursing interventions that reduce recidivism. And I mean, there's some interesting research by Frudenberg that shows that people who come out of prison and have access to health care are less likely to recidivate. So how might we look at what we can do within prison to reduce some of those outcomes? And I'd also add, as an aside, in the UK, they have a wonderful system of really trying to make their prisons health-promoting institutions. They've adapted some of the policies of the World Health Organization Health in Prison Project, where they link primary care providers in the community with prison health in the various institutions. So there's a lot of challenges in doing research on the nursing workforce in jails and prisons, to say the least. And Shelton has summarized a number of these, and I've adapted it a little bit. But certainly there's enormous difficulty in obtaining samples. Most of the research I've read discusses how tough it is to get a sample of nurses working in jails and prisons. There's workforce issues. Some of these individuals belong to unions, others don't. Some of them are LPNs, LVNs, some are RNs. So you get a mixture of academic preparation. IRB processes are enormously cumbersome. For a survey that we're doing, we've had to get IRB approval from two universities, and now we're having to get approval from various institutions that we go to. There's a variability of systems. We have federal prisons, we have state prisons, we have local jails, we have private facilities that are run by private corporations, we have immigration facilities, we have juvenile facilities. You know, all of these populations have different health care needs. And finally, there's a lack of reliable and validated instrumentation to examine nursing practice in these settings. So in 1994, Dr. Drow said studies related to nursing's role in the delivery of prison health services are scarce. And I would have to say the same is true today in 2011. We've concluded that nurses working in prisons and jails share the invisibility and the stigma sometimes that their prisoners do. It's very similar to the work of Irving Goffman, who talks about the courtesy stigma, that the people who are working with the stigmatized sometimes share in their stigma. And there's little published about nurses working in jails and prisons outside of the specialty journals. It's difficult to determine just how many there are. They are not identified by the American Nurses Association's distribution of employment in 2010. We have written to them to tell them this. They're not identified by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They are not identified by the Bureau of Justice Statistics. And the man from ANA has written to them to tell them that they have. HRSA does have some information in their National Nurses Sample Survey, and they say there are about 14,000 nurses working in prisons. That's not hospitals in prisons. That's nurses working in prisons. And the National, State Board of Nursing Group, National Council on State Boards of Nursing, has done a study of LVN, LPNs, who reported about 1% working in prisons. So it gives us a small idea. Our own research is looking at a prison nurse stress survey. We want to better understand the nature of the nursing workforce in U.S. jails and prisons. And if any of you are interested, we'd be happy to talk to you about it. Thank you.